This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma! We get some meatloaf!
You're insane. You're absolutely insane.
My palace.
My house isn't even a stained spread. It's for shit. Are you telling me?
What did
I? I don't know what we're yelling about!
Now, if you don't think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off that.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
Hi, I'm Bill White, and welcome to Chicago Bulldog.
I gotta be honest, I come in, it's like a little, like, I'm trying to get my
bearings,
there's cartoons, your mom, and it's like, you still got it. It's living the dream.
Tim Gallagher, again, joins Chicago Bullseye. Tim, great to have you on again. And as we just finished the incredible Villanova, North Carolina college national championship game, so that'd be a great opportunity to bring you in since you're our resident expert on all things basketball, but especially the college game. I'd like to get your impressions on that game. Where does it rank for you in the great history of finals, NCAA finals? And also, get your take on Villanova's, to me, very surprising victory over North Carolina.
Sure. Well, it was a fun game to watch. And I thought when Villanova had the 10-point lead late in the game that they had it sewed up. In fact, I told a buddy that I was watching the game with Villanova's guards, that they're going to really protect this lead. And then what do you know, Carolina goes on a run and eventually ties the game. So, you know, I wasn't in Houston. I've been to 20 Final Fours and enjoyed all of them and have been watching all of them. And, you know, you kind of tend to go with the most recent as the greatest finish of all time. But, you know, I was thinking back at ones I've attended, and I was at the famous North Carolina State, Lorenzo Charles dunking in the air ball against Viceland Ajama. I was at the game when Gordon Hayward missed that, you know, beyond half-court shot that, you know, that game probably
against Duke, there
for me.
Right.
Yeah, against Duke and, you know, Kyle Singler and Nolan Smith and that group. So there's been so many great ones. It's hard to, you know, it's like comparing, you know, Wilt, Russell, and Jabbar, right? They were all great in their own way and had unique strengths that were, you know, top of the other one. So it's hard to really pick a favorite, but that's certainly ranked up there. And, you know, how many times are you going to get, you know, lead changes on 3-point shots in the last seconds of the game. And, you know, Villanova just seemed to have a certain toughness and leadership. And Jay Wright is certainly a very calm and composed presence on the sidelines and probably one of the more underrated coaches just because he stayed in one place for a while. And, you know, he certainly looks like the kind of guy that would be an NBA coach someday. But, you know, his ties are to Philadelphia and obviously he's doing it right at Villanova. They've consistently won the whole time he was there and probably have had some teams with as much talent as this one, but as we always see in the tournament, it takes a few breaks and things to go their way. But when they handled Kansas, that's who I had winning the whole thing in my bracket. So when they beat Kansas, that kind of set it for me that this team could beat anybody. And obviously they came through. I guess the one thing that surprised me, and we've talked before about defending against 3-point shots late in the game, one thing that surprised me, though, and kind of just shows the thin margin of being a hero or a goat, was that Villanova didn't foul when North Carolina was down 3 and bringing the ball up the court, and when Paige hit that crazy contorted 3-point shot, I thought there were a couple chances for Villanova to foul, just play real aggressive on the dribble up the floor and not let a guy shoot a 3 to tie the game. And, of course, we all know what happened where Jenkins came down and hits the 3 to win the game. But if that game goes into overtime, if Villanova doesn't score there and it goes into overtime and they lose, I wonder if Jay Wright's getting heavily criticized for not fouling when you're up 3 and even giving Carolina a chance to tie the game. But in that case, it got solved pretty quickly where Villanova came down and hit the winning shot. And, you know, it looked like a pretty free and easy jump shot by Jenkins. And it's kind of fun, as you know, from playing ball, Fred, when you get somebody that kind of gives you that dribble handoff or dish and you got an open look. That's a pretty easy and fun shot to take, and obviously he was very confident and nailed it. But,
absolutely, to step into that jumper, I mean, and really have pretty a clear look at it, there's nothing to lose there, right? And nobody's expecting him to make it, for the most part. It was pretty far out, but he had a nice clear look at it, and he could be the hero. He made the shot, congrats to him, but it was a great setup, absolutely was.
Right, and, you know, there's a picture I saw in the New York Times that somebody sent of that last shot, and it's interesting that in 4.7 seconds, Villanova had to go length of the floor as well, and Archie Giannakou is no John Wall in terms of foot speed, but somehow he got all the way there and essentially to the three-point line and then dished it back, and in the photo, none of the Carolina defenders are outside the three-point line. All five of them are inside the three-point line, so that they weren't more aggressively guarding the ball, and then you do see Bryce Johnson kind of doing the rim protection. He's the one guy in the paint that, you know, that they didn't really make Villanova take a harder shot, right? And
right.
You're right. Maybe that shot that Jenkins hit, even as common as long 3-point shots are, especially in the NBA game, but you see it all the time, even with guys like Curry and Klay Thompson, that people expect that they're going to shoot 27 to 30 footers. I think the defenders are so accustomed to that's just too far out. They're not going to shoot from there, even in a game winner, right? I thought Carolina was almost a little too casual defending that shot when the game's on the line. But hey, he made it, and good for Villanova.
You know, I think right.
Jay Wright's a real classy guy. You're going to ask me about Jay Wright, I think.
And
it was funny. I was just reminiscing with my son. So last year we were at the downtown Coaches Hotel in Indianapolis, and Jay Wright's team wasn't in the Final Four, and he and Mark Few were kind of waiting outside by the elevators and very gracious with fans and, you know, taking pictures and signing autographs. And he's a very approachable and nice guy. And I had another good experience with him a few years back. One of our neighbors, he ended up playing at the University of Pennsylvania, named Eric Osmundson. He also played in the NBA D League a little bit with the now-defunct Colorado 14ers. But his senior year at Penn, we went back to see him play, and they played Villanova in the Palestra, which is known as the Cathedral of Basketball. And for any of you listeners that have a bucket list of college basketball venues, I highly recommend that you see a game in the Palestra. In Philadelphia, it's Penn's home court, but they do host other Philadelphia area teams games and have for many, many years. But anyway, we flew back. I met my dad back there actually for the game. He flew in from Dayton. I flew in from San Diego. So we got to see Penn shoot around earlier in the day. And after practice, our friend Eric Osmundson, who I mentioned, and Coach Dumphy, who's now the coach at Temple, were down in the court and we were just chatting with them. Courtside, and the Villanova team came in for their shoot-around. That Villanova team had Randy Foy and Kyle Lowry and another player named Alan Ray, who played a little bit in the NBA as well. And so we were just standing there, and the Philadelphia coaches, the Big Five coaches, know each other quite well. And so, of course, Jay Wright came over to Dumphy and then saw my dad and I standing there and introduced himself to us, and we explained, you know, what had brought us there and from what far reaches from Philadelphia that we were on hand. And he invited us to stay and watch Villanova shoot around, which he didn't really know us from anything, but obviously figured out we were hoop junkies to be in Philadelphia from far destinations in Ohio and California. So just, you know, very sincere, genuine, and, you know, again, and I've seen him in a couple different settings where he's been true to that character. So hard to not like Jay Wright.
Interesting. Great story there. You mentioned Mark Few. Mark Few's the Gonzaga coach, right? Correct?
Yes. Yep.
How was he?
Oh, he's great also. Yeah, you know, and, although there's some coaches that don't have, you know, quite that accessibility, I guess. And, you know, obviously people like Coach K and, you know, almost like presidential, right, where you really can't get close to them. But guys like Jay Wright, Mark Few, if you're ever at the main coach's headquarters hotel at the Final Four, and their teams aren't there, you know, they're there just among their coaching colleagues. You know, most of those guys, and those two in particular, are very approachable and, you know, will spend a moment with fans and just classy guys.
Awesome. Fantastic. Good stuff there. I did want to briefly mention before we get into the college players, the guys that are most likely going to be drafted, and the top 10 guys out there right now. Jim Boeheim, who got a Syracuse team no one expected to get to the Final Four, he got him there before they lost to Carolina. I was unaware that Jim Boeheim actually played, which was shocking to me, at Syracuse.
Yep.
And in addition to that, he was actually had a tryout with the Beloved Bulls and was cut by Johnny Red Kerr. Did you know that?
Well, I didn't know at what level he pursued playing professionally, but I know he was a teammate of Dave Bing, the Hall of Fame player and, you know, legendary Pistons and Bullets player, and they were teammates together at Syracuse when they played. So yeah, I was aware that he had a pretty successful college career, but didn't know to what pursuits he pursued playing professional basketball. But that's interesting. That was in the Chicago papers during the tournament?
Yeah, I heard it actually Neil Funk, who went to Syracuse, give a story about Jim Boeheim trying out and being cut by Johnny Red Kerr, who was the first actual head coach of the Bulls in the late 60s. So, I mean, I did not even know, I had no idea that Jim Boeheim was that good of a basketball player to even earn a tryout, right, with an NBA team. So,
sure.
But, I mean, he's obviously done an incredible job, and he does have a unique defense, and obviously that you don't see quite a bit in college basketball. So what makes Jim Boeheim so special to you?
Well, just the consistency year in and year out, and I don't know how he does it. I do have some issue with some of the scandal, I guess, that surrounded that program, and somehow he's managed to come through it mostly unscathed. I mean, they were banned from the tournament last year. I think it was a self-imposed ban. He was suspended for the first, half of the season almost this year. So obviously something is.
What was that regarding? Could you go a little bit in, just to give a 411 on what the scandal was? Because I think a lot of listeners probably aren't aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all the details beyond just improper benefits. And I don't know how much of that was academic or off-season jobs for players or things like that. I think there was a mix of a few of those things. That there was enough that, you know, there wasn't a total lockdown of the program, but you know, they weren't even, you know, invited to the tournament last year because of that, and then his suspension this year. So despite his success, to me, there's a little bit of a dark cloud there that's kind of followed him, and somehow he's come through it, and here he is in another Final Four, right? So, and, you know, and it was kind of tough to me to see him beat good guys like Mark Few from Gonzaga that we just talked about, and then Tony Bennett a couple of days later at Virginia, who's, again, I don't know all the inside information of how Gonzaga and Virginia run their programs, but, you know, there's really not been any thought of any scandal or improprieties going on at those schools, and they've been successful too. But, yeah, Boeheim just, he makes it happen in Syracuse, right? But Syracuse basketball is big business. It's probably big for that town, big for that community, big for that university. So, you know, the amount of revenue he's probably generated for that school and for that city would probably blow our minds, right? So, so I'm sure there's some awareness of that of people in business and looking to make money. And, you know, he's good for business, right? So maybe he gets a little longer lease maybe than some of these other programs or other schools.
So interesting.
So for me, Jim Boeheim, there's a little little tarnish to the shine of his success.
Good. Yeah. Thanks for the little 411 there on that, Tim. I'd like to get into the top 10 prospects from the college game. Also, you know, foreign players. Do you have a list that you've put together? Obviously, we've heard the name Ben Simmons, and if the Bulls end up in the lottery, I mean, that's a name I've seen enough of him where although I have questions about his outside jumper, he's obviously an incredibly talented player. Who are the guys that have impressed you? What's your personal top 10, and can you give us a little 411 on some of these players?
Sure. Well, and I know it's still a work in progress now in terms of who all is declared, and now it looks like the NBA has and the NCAA have worked together to make it a little more flexible where if someone hasn't signed with an agent, they've got a chance to go to the combine and get evaluated and have a chance to go back to school, because for every player that comes out early and has a lot of success, there's, I can't even imagine that, you know, it's probably another 10 to 20 that shouldn't have come out early, that really should have gone back to school and, you know, would have helped them develop not only as a player, but, you know, matured as a person and some other things. So, you know, the other interesting thing, and there's a friend that's an NBA scout that I know, and he kind of evaluates players at a couple different levels. One is, you know, can they make a team, you know, be on a roster? The second level is, can they get in a game now? You know, are they really physically, mentally, skill-wise able to come into an NBA game and make a contribution? And then even the next level above that is, can they be a starter or a rotation player? So, you know, we've seen it over the years where these guys end up on the Sixers or the Kings, and you know, you really, you don't hear much about them after that, right? Where,
Right.
So the guys, you know, so there are players like Ben Simmons. I saw Ingram play. I was at the West Regionals up in Anaheim, and so I saw Duke play Oregon. And Oregon manhandled Duke pretty well there, although Ingram had, I think, 24 points and was impressive, but he's so thin. And although, you know, he did remind me a little bit of Durant. I saw Durant play as a freshman in college in person against Gonzaga, actually. And I remember Durant, you know, being good, but I looked up toward the end of the game and saw that he had 29 points, and that was kind of surprising. He did it kind of quietly. And Ingram was kind of the same way. But just with the physicality and the intensity of an NBA game, and even with the more wide-open styles that we're seeing now, and, you know, more three-point shooting and, you know, not, you know, the pack it down in the low-block post play that, you know, that maybe was part of the NBA, you know, years ago, it's still hard to imagine he's strong enough, and I don't even mean physically, just strong enough physically and mentally to come into an NBA game now and make an impact, right? But you know, Ingram's certainly impressive. You know, I saw Buddy Hield play, which, again, is he a top five pick? You know, I don't know that he's that good. You know, he kind of reminds me a little bit in a lot of ways of a Jimmy Butler, right, in terms of just what his contribution to a team could be, you know, if he's in the right scenario. But remember, Jimmy Butler was, what, the last pick in the first round, where they're talking Buddy Hield in the top five. So I just don't know that he's that much of an impact player either. With Ben Simmons, just, you know, the NCAA seemed pretty wide open this year. And so the fact that he came into LSU with such credentials that they didn't even get into the tournament. And I know he put up some near triple-double numbers, but if he was that good, in my view, that LSU would have had a more significant season than they did. And then the fact that they opted not to play in the NIT or any other tournament just kind of concerns me, right? Or what are they really, what's the goal there, right? Are they trying to build for the future? Obviously, Ben Simmons was going to be a one-and-done anyway, but I thought his season, despite some of the accolades, was pretty underwhelming. And I was trying to think, you know, who's his play like at the next level, right? Is he as good as Aaron Gordon? Is he as good as Draymond Green? You know, guys that are versatile, athletic. You know, Ben Simmons doesn't shoot the ball that well. I almost see him kind of as a poor man's Aaron Gordon. And obviously Aaron Gordon, young player, just 1 year at Arizona, but a pretty dynamic talent. And, you know, he's still struggling to find his way and get Orlando kind of out of the lottery, right? Which they've kind of been stuck in there for a while. So
you wouldn't have Ben Simmons. You wouldn't have Ben as your number one pick. I mean, right now you're drafting. What player in would you take at number one if you had? Is there a difference maker? This guy's on the team. I think this guy's a multiple all-star, and I think this guy's going to make a major difference for your franchise.
Yeah, I guess I would probably go with Ingram, looking to the future. The other thing is, it's going to depend on the team and what mix they have, right? So let's say the Lakers are maybe at number two. And despite the struggles of the Lakers this year, I think there is a solid base of young talent there when you're talking about Randall, Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, and Larry Nance Jr. I think those four guys still very immature. Obviously, some of the latest things with D'Angelo Russell and Swaggy P just kind of shows the lack of maturity and professionalism there. But I think there's some talent there. And so if I knew I had that mix of guys and Sabonis was on the board, you know, 6'10", kind of a Bogut-like presence in terms of on the boards, and, you know, it would be hard for me to pass on Sabonis, which he hasn't declared for sure yet, but I don't know if you watched much of Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament, but he was just a monster on the boards. And plus, I just love the passion that he plays with. And, you know, and then guys that are the sons of ex-players, you know, there's a pretty good track record there. You don't have to go far beyond Curry and Klay Thompson for that element, too, that's helpful.
Could you give really a little 4-1-1?
I love Sabonis.
Could you give a little 4-1-1 on then Ingram and Sabonis? It sounds like you like those two guys, Warren and Simmons. Who did they comp out at, and would they be a good fit on the Bulls?
Well, I think those guys are going to be gone, you know, long before the Bulls pick, unless the lottery really turns their way in terms of, you know, getting a very early pick. You know, some of the players that I think are ready to step into an NBA game now, and, you know, if the Bulls are picking, let's say they do get in the lottery and they pick somewhere between, say, 7 and, you know, and 15 or something, you know, I could see someone like Jamal Murray from Kentucky, and even though he's only played 1 year of college, he's Canadian, has had some international experience, and just, to me, looks like an NBA talent and kind of the mindset to play in an NBA game right now, even though he's a younger guy.
And for those who don't know who he is, like, could you describe what position he plays? What do you think he you know, like a comparable NBA type of player for him?
Yep, yeah, he's a 6'4" combo guard, so point guard, shooting guard. He kind of reminds me of a little less wild Monte Ellis type of player. You know, so, you know, he plays with that kind of heart and toughness and, you know, was certainly willing to take some big shots at Kentucky. So another player I like that I think could step in and play right now is Bryce Johnson from North Carolina, who we just saw play in the finals. So, you know, I could see him being a Taj Gibson-type frontline player and, you know, a 4-year college player at North Carolina. So, you know, he's played in a lot of big games, a lot of tough competition, obviously just took his team to within a couple points of winning the NCAA championship. So, again, I'm talking about guys who can step in and play now. Denzel Valentine, even though Michigan State had an early exit, you know, he's also a combo player. I mean, they even talked about him a little bit at point because he did average, to me, it was a surprising number of assists. I think he averaged almost 7 assists a game this year. But, you know, 6'6", 220, and obviously a lot of the Bulls fans in the Big Ten country, you know, have seen him play over the years. Again, son of a former player. His dad, Carlton Valentine, was a really good player at Michigan State back in the day. So, you know, I'm looking for those kind of attributes, I guess, to have, because I think unless the Bulls totally blow this thing up, which I don't think they will, you know, I think they're looking for players that can step in and contribute right away, not someone that's years away, right, in terms of, like, the two players from Cal, Ivan Rabb or Jaylen Brown, or there's two players from the University of Washington. So I know we're talking out west here, but Murray and Marquise Chris from Washington, very athletic. Both of them are freshmen. Both have declared really talented players that'll be NBA players. But from what I've seen of them, they're still years away, like 2-3 years away from really having an impact on an NBA game. So it's kind of a little bit of a brain teaser in terms of, you know, which of these guys are really ready to go right now. Another player I really like is Demetrius Jackson from Notre Dame, the point guard. So when I see him play, you know, I see, you know, that's an NBA player. That's, you know, that's an NBA point guard, you know, that I would entrust my team with. And he's got the athleticism and talent, toughness. You know, Notre Dame, people have watched them. They've had 2 deep runs in the tournament the last 2 years. He's been a big part of that. You know, had the big steal at the end of the game against Wisconsin. So, you know, there's players like that that, you know, I'm thinking, who can help me today? And obviously Bulls fans are impatient. They want somebody that's going to help now and I don't think rebuilding is really really something that any of us have on our minds for the Bulls.
No, agreed. So I think some fans might have it on their minds, but I think, you know, with the level of talent of Butler and Rose, you're never going to truly rebuild unless you get rid of both of them, because you're going to be too good to really be a lower-end team.
Right, right. And then, again, and I don't know, there's some other foreign players that I'm not as familiar with, so I can't really comment on them. I haven't looked at enough film of some of them. I know one of the draft boards I looked at had Chris Dunn from Providence in the top five, which he's a dynamic player, but I just don't see it. I don't see the consistency. He kind of reminds me a little bit of DeLon Wright from Utah, and you might recall we talked about him last year coming out in the draft, and I wasn't high on him. And he got drafted by Toronto, but he hasn't really played much. And Norman Powell, who's someone I did talk about, a four-year college player from UCLA, has really played ahead of DeLon Wright, and really, DeLon really hasn't seen much time at all for Toronto. And I see Dunn as a similar type player. So athletic and dynamic, kind of the T's would be kind of like John Wall, but they just can't score the ball like that or not consistent like that from what I see.
Interesting. Tim, thanks again for providing all this information on the college players. Before we go, I'd like to get your opinion. You already given us 25 minutes, so I can't thank you enough for your time. I'd like to get your opinion on the Bulls, where we're at right now. Obviously, two games out of the playoffs, six to go, not looking good. What, in your opinion, the primary causes for this team just struggling so badly down the stretch, outside of injuries, which are obvious? And I'd also like to get your opinion. Do you think Rose and Butler can play together? I mean, I've kind of come around to the idea that I don't think these two guys can play together. They both shoot pretty poorly from three. They don't extend the defense. I think you need one or the other to go to really kind of optimize where this team goes and in replace them with a better shooter. What's your take?
Well, just on the team in general, so, it's kind of a long shot, but there's still a slim hope to making the playoffs. And I guess the thing that was crushing for me were those back-to-back losses to the Knicks. I thought, okay, here's where they can really make up some ground. And when that happened, that really kind of sunk a lot of my hopes. But it's kind of some of their surprising losses and victories. It's kind of epitomized the whole season, right, in terms of just when you think you've given up on this team and they're not going anywhere, they'll come up with a road win like in Houston, right, where it's kind of stunning, really. Where Houston's fighting for their playoff lives as well, and just beat OKC at home the other day. So, obviously the injuries, but then I think about there's other teams that have had pretty devastating injuries as well. Now, Memphis is kind of limping to the finish line. I just heard Conley's not going to play the rest of the season because of his Achilles issues. The Clippers were without Blake Griffin for a long period of time, but somehow those teams are well over 500, and now they're both in the West, which we've talked about how the East overall has improved a lot this year. So I guess one view would be with all the injuries, and I haven't seen the tabulation of how many combined games they've missed, Noah, Butler, Rose, Gibson, basically key guys, right, that one view would be, well, gee, they're a game over 500 with all the X number of games those guys have missed combined. They're lucky to be a game over 500 and even have a sniff at the playoffs at this point. But the other, you're right, there is something that just hasn't aligned right with this team all year. And, beyond just the injuries. And I can't quite put my finger on it as well. I know that, there's been some improvement, obviously, with Jimmy when he was healthy, seemed to take it to another level. McDermott showed real signs of improvement this year, I thought. Saul was kind of a real treasure to watch some of the things he can do at his age. But also, I think he kind of wore down just because there wasn't, having Noah, at his back, so to speak, for rim protection and just to take a little of the pressure off him. Obviously, Taj didn't do it. Or didn't do the level they needed. Portis, I think, showed some signs. I think that was a very shrewd pick for where they got him, and I think there's a bright future for him. But kind of like I talked about looking at the draft, right? This guy was the MVP of the Southeastern Conference, and where because of the injuries and other struggles of the Bulls, there was kind of a red carpet out for him to really step in and even do more. But it shows you what a big jump it is from even the elite college level programs to be an impact player at the NBA level. So I agree with you that with Jimmy and Derek, that mix is not as promising as you would think. And I think part of it is just both of their leadership styles, which they're both kind of quiet, right? They're both more by example. You know, Derek doesn't really embrace, you know, vocal leadership or rallying his teammates. You know, Jimmy is more, I'm just going to totally bust it out here and I'll show you by my effort. But yeah, something's missing there in terms of just leadership. And it doesn't necessarily even have to come from those two guys. You know, the interesting mix with Golden State is you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but really the vocal leader of that team is Draymond Green, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be one of those two, but there's no one else that's kind of stepped up. Maybe if Noah was healthy and younger, he would be a guy to fill that slot, but those days are gone with him. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think because of the disappointment of the season for various reasons, there's going to be some changes. I don't know, obviously, what's going to happen with Powell. I don't know who they'd find to contribute what he's done to that team on a lot of levels to replace that. That would be tough. Obviously, Noah's status is unknown. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. I guess one other quick Bulls thought, and on a positive note, congratulate Jerry Reinsdorf for getting inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. So obviously, it's been a body of work, and even though this season's been a little bit of a downer for the Bulls, that over the course of the franchise, and it's certainly under Reinsdorf's watch, it's been more successful than most. And you know, especially seeing some dips of what the Lakers are going through right now. I know the Bulls had a little bit of a dark time there, obviously after Jordan left and Phil Jackson left, but really since Skiles, Skiles and then Tibbs, things have been on a pretty good course here lately.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tim, thanks again for joining Chicago Bullseye, sharing your thoughts regarding the beloved Bulls, and especially in college basketball. All the best to you, my friend, and we'll have you on again soon. I really appreciate it, and like to hopefully have you on next week to discuss the playoffs. You know, we'll have a better idea with the picture of the playoffs and, you know, who's going to play who. And really looking forward to hearing your thoughts on who's going to be coming out of the East and West.
That sounds great, Fred. Hey, one other last thought on the NCAA tournament. And one thing that never settled with me was Charles Barkley's tuxedo piano rendition of One Shining Moment. Because my feeling is that's just a song you don't mess with. What they were going for there, but I think it would have been funnier if Charles would have really tried to sing it his best, and it obviously still would have been off. But the fact that he, really went, off the rails trying to sing it badly, just disrespected that song. And that song is just too important to mess with, right? It was one thing I could think of was when Roseanne Barr sang the national anthem at a Padres game a long time ago, and what a disgrace that was. So I usually love Charles, but
I don't know why he's comment. I don't know whether he insists on him commenting on college basketball. He obviously doesn't know it, love it, or want to watch it. You know, so why do they keep on dragging him out to talk about it? I love him on the pro game, but I completely agree with you on, he's not really qualified and. Then the joke around about this. I understand your point.
I mean, I'm kind of saying that tongue in cheek, but it just kind of disturbed me because that song is, that song is so special that you just don't mess with it. So that every time that came on, I had to hustle and find the mute button because I couldn't hear him do it. And it's not just because of his inability to sing, right? It's a bigger disrespect of what that song in the tournament means. But yeah, a lot of fun. We'll talk next week as we look at the playoffs. We'll see if the Warriors were able to make history with beating the Bulls streak of or not streak, but 73 wins. And I don't know. It's going to come down to
your prediction. Your prediction, you think they're going to do it?
I think they'll do it. And it's mainly because I don't think the Spurs are going to go all out, because their spot is really not going to change, right? They're locked for the number two seed. And I could see Pop not putting his full resources out there and, you know, just getting rest. And it seems like the Warriors are motivated to do it. But, the other thing we can talk about is kind of look back on our preseason predictions in terms of and how the teams actually did. I think we came pretty close for the most part. You know, there were a few surprises and a few disappointments, but I think more or less we lined it up pretty accurately.
That'll be great. Let's do it. Hey, brother.
Bye.
Take me on again. Have a good one.
Okay. Take care.